Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30, that's NATION30, for 30% off of your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. Well, 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 well. Hopefully everybody is having a good day today. I am running solo on this episode. It's nice and sunny out here in Iowa. We've gotten some rain. Everything looks like it's progressing very well. I haven't checked trail cameras in a while, and that's something that's on my to-do list. But I'm just going to kind of go into a no-fluff episode here real quick, and I want to talk a little bit about hard lessons that I've learned throughout the years and maybe share some of that with you. So although I feel like you need to fail and learn some of the lessons the hard way to, you know, so everybody gets those aha type moments. But also some of this stuff can really help you if, especially if you're tired, right? And, you know, making dumb mistakes is what I'm going to say. And I still make them to this day. I make tons of dumb mistakes out in the woods. And most of them happen when I'm extremely tired, or it's towards the end of a long day or a long week of hunting. And that's typically when I start to really start, the mental fatigue causes the, the brain farts, the mental fatigue really start to hinder the decision making. And then you're doing things that are, I don't know, are dumb. and you're making rookie mistakes out there. So we're going to try to avoid those, and I'm going to share a lot, some of this stuff that I've gone through the hard way. And whether you know this or not, or maybe you can take it into the woods with you, or maybe you've already learned your lessons the hard way, these are some of the things that I have really screwed up on in the past. And I already have a tired throat for some reason, probably from yelling at my kids. So I'm gonna drink some water. All right. Whoops. All right. So I want to get into this episode, but first I just kind of want to send a shout out. I'm not going to do a full line of commercials for you guys. I just want to say, you know, huge shout out to Wasp Archery, Vortex Optics, Hunt Stand, Ozonix, Lone Wolf, Exodus Trail Cameras, and Excalibur Crossbows. Please go out and take a look at all of the products that these guys offer. All those companies are excellent companies. I use these products for a reason, and they allow me to be the style of hunter that I am in, you know, pretty much every facet. So please, I'll say them one more time so you can go take a look at them. Excalibur Crossbows, Exodus Trail Cameras, Lone Wolf Tree Stands, Ozonix Scent Elimination, Hunt Stand, Digital Mapping, and the app, Vortex Optics, obviously, and Wasp Broadheads. Please go out and support those companies. Now, let's get right into it, because my kids are going to be home from school, and I don't want to be here when they do. So, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk a little bit about these dumb mistakes that I've made in the past. And a lot of them have had to do with when I started running and gunning, right? Living that mobile lifestyle. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, I don't want to talk about access routes right now because they're very important. The first thing that I want to say is, and I wrote some notes here, and the first bullet point is do not backtrack. So I've had to learn this lesson the hard way a couple times, where you pop into the timber and you're looking for good terrain. You're looking for everything that you're supposed to be looking for. Maybe sign, maybe terrain, maybe edge, whether that's vegetation, maybe a pinch point or a funnel or whatever. You're looking for all these things. But what I used to do that really kicked me in my ass was I would go in, I'd find a good spot, but then I'd say, hey man, I'm just gonna try to get a little bit closer. I'm just gonna creep in a little bit more. So I would go in 40, 50, however many more yards, and then I would second guess myself, and then I would say, all right, well, I'm gonna go back to that original spot, right? So what I've done is I've just laid scent and I've intruded in that position every single, 50 yards, right? So if a weary buck or a weary doe is coming up that ridgeline, they could potentially catch my scent and I would never even, you know, sometimes never even see them or never even have a shot opportunity at them if I did see them, because they would, they'd catch my ground scent and they'd be like, I'm going to go the long way around. You know, maybe it wasn't a immediate threat, but it spooked them out just enough to where maybe they flanked my position out of shooting range, or they turned around and walked the other way. Maybe they didn't even blow. They just maybe skirted down to the next ridge and then walked up that ridge. So don't backtrack. Once you get into a certain point, don't back out. Set up right there. That is as far as access or access route is concerned. Dude, I've been busted so many times back in the day from this and learning from this that even if I made a bad decision and I went too far, I had to commit to that point, right? Because either way, if they go through that original spot or they come in to where you've already laid your ground scent, you've already lost before you're even up in the tree, right? Especially if the doe or the buck is weary and really skittish, you know, like, I don't know, from what I hear, a lot of people hunt skittish deer, especially in some of this high-pressured public that everybody talks about. So that would be one of the most important things as to, you know, kind of choosing a tree stand location on a run and gun access route. I think that little piece of advice when someone gave it to me was probably the biggest, one of the biggest, you know, aside from, hey, just being mobile, it was probably one of the biggest pieces of advice that I've ever received from anybody, or I have learned the hard way. I can remember, I want to say it was late 2000s. And I'd seen a buck up on top of this ridge. I was down in a river bottom and I saw him up on this ridge. And one day I walked into the same ridge that I saw him at the night before. I walked down the ridge a little too far. And I said, well, there's this little spur ridge. I think this little terrain feature where this edge meets. And I set up there instead. So I walked down the ridge, turn around, walk back. Sure enough, this 170, this is no shit, 170 inch eight pointer pops his head out and comes up to the, starts working his way up the ridge. Sure enough, he catches something and he did not like it. And he turned around and just casually walked to the next ridge. And then I lost him after that. So that was a kick in the nuts that day. That might have even been like 2010 or 2009 or something like that. I can't remember. But he was a giant. And I think about that every single day when I'm doing my mobile hunting and I'm walking in. I'm like, do not go one step further. So every step really matters at that point. You have to be so anal retentive in that approach. I don't know. That's just me, and that's where I've failed over the years, and that's how I've corrected. And that corrective, that correcting has led to me having way more encounters with deer, whether they're shooters or not. A shooter deer just isn't on every ridge, right? Or every setup. It's as far as the access is concerned, and that strategy, I just have been put into more opportunities when I really watch how deep and far I go, and I don't second guess myself and I don't backtrack. So rule number one, I guess, would be don't backtrack on those access routes. So Loctite access, right? Everybody always talks about this. You've heard this 100 times, first time in, best time in. And I can agree with that. But I can also say that the first time in is the best time in, but throw a little asterisk up there. But if your access route is lock tight, you can get away with hunting that stand multiple times. And I'll give you an example. So I used to be this field edge hunter, right? Just like everybody used to be at some point. Got sick of it, got mobile. And, a couple years go by and I find this real good edge that leads into a staging area. So it's kind of thick timber. It becomes open timber on this ridge, on both sides of the ridge, you know, on that military crest that everybody talks about. There's big trails leading up. So the ridge runs west and east. East is high ground, west runs to the creek, there's thickness on the end of the ridge. It opens up into a little bit wider timber, and then it hits this hard edge where it's real thick, starts getting thick and nasty, and it leads into this beautiful staging area. So I hunt on that edge that leads right into this staging area where all the sign starts. They stage up before they go into the fields. So on a north wind, it's blowing right in my face, and then it's going south and it's getting sucked down into this other little drainage, and they have no clue I'm there. I can let them, I let doe groups walk by all night. It's a perfect setup. And what makes it perfect is the access route. And I live by this, I don't know, I kind of call it the rule of 90, where I will walk into an area and then on my entrance into the stand location, whether I've picked it out or not, I am taking a hard 90 degree turn into that tree stand. Almost like if you've ever heard the strategy of how mature bucks or really smart deer J-hook into their bed. So they'll have a bedding location and they'll J-hook down into it in order to get to the, you know, the best wind, so they can scent check that bed as they walk into it. And I'll tell you this, the same strategy can be used in your access route, right? It's almost like a game of chess. So I drop down into this low point of this drainage, and then I 90 degree up into this stand. And what makes this particular stand so attractive is that when the wind blows over, it gets sucked down into this drainage and goes somewhere. I don't know where it goes, but it doesn't bother the deer, right? I've found that. Also, on the entrance into that, where I start my 90 degree turn, I'm following the low point on the south side of the ridge. I follow it up, and then I go straight uphill, right? It's this little terrain feature that deer typically don't travel because it's kind of steep. And I use that to my advantage, up into this tree stand. And it is, it's a beautiful tree stand that I've had a lot of encounters throughout the year. Not necessarily, I shot a 170 incher, never found him, because that was back in the day when I, was filming. He was probably a 5-year-old Boone and Crockett 10. My dumb ass tried to get him on film. And instead I tried to get him on film. I let him walk through a shooting lane, and then I put some dumbass shot on him, and he lived to the next year. He got bigger, and then the neighbor shot him. So that's another lesson learned. So anyway, but what makes this stand so beautiful is that I get in it. The deer are walking to the north of me on this military crest. I'm below their trail. And after that, it's been like, I don't know. It's my scent goes away, and they just go through. And then even on the morning hunts, I'd use the same access route, and the deer come back by me, and I can sit in that stand multiple times a week and get away with that same movement on specific winds. Right now, that stand location would not work on a south wind or a southeast wind or a west wind or an east wind, because you're jeopardizing, you know, I'm not trying to cut the wind hard. I'm almost trying to cut it at that 90 degree angle where deer travel is east west, wind is straight north. Now I could potentially, on the other side of the ridge, I have another stand, and I just flip it, right? So if there's a south wind, the deer are going to be on the north facing slope, and I'm doing the same thing on the other side of the ridge. So technically you can approach a stand location or a ridge in two different ways. Now you can also do it if the ridge runs north south or south north. You can do it on an east west wind and do have the same type of access into there, so to speak. Now, this is another thing that I've learned that is really like, it is so hard to do. It's so hard to make yourself do it, especially after a long day of hunting, a long week of hunting. You want to take the easiest route back to your truck, but you can't do that. Like, because you could potentially bump deer that are still on that trail at dark, or, you know, if you're like, hey, I'm just going to take, I know the deer are coming from the bedding area, they're going to walk right in front of me. Even on my, you know, a lot of it is based off the wind, but even on my access route after a morning hunt or after an evening hunt, I take the exact same route, and it's the long way around. And I just don't want to get lazy and walk down a trail, and you're just leaving that scent all over that. And that is what allows me to get away with hunting a stand, especially in this example, a stand multiple times and it feeling fresh every single time, because the access route is so lock tight. And I strongly suggest really focusing on that this year. If you're not doing it, and you're taking you're putting a whole bunch of work into accessing the tree stand, getting to the tree stand from your truck, and, you know, being real refined in your approach, also have the same type of, you know, pay attention on the way out as well. And I would strongly suggest getting out the same way. Now, there's this one, I could walk across a cornfield 800 yards from where I park my truck, jump into this little strip of timber, and I could do it. But the access is bad, right? The deer would catch my scent at some point of me walking through this cornfield, potentially. So what I do, it's the long way around. I drop down into a creek. I'll walk a creek. I'll cross it once. I'll get down a little further. Then I have to cross it again because of the bank situation. And so I'm crossing a creek two times. And guess what? I do the exact same thing on the way out. I don't want to. All I want to do is walk right across the cornfield. But the deer are already in it on an evening hunt. Or on a morning hunt, you know, it's probably not as bad. I could walk across that cornfield and the scent would probably deteriorate throughout the day. But I don't want to take any of those chances. And that is what allows a tree stand to be hunted multiple times, right? It's not so invasive into that area. Now, there are times where on a run and gun, I know that, geez, I'm going in deep and I'm going to make a lot. I'm going in. I'm only hunting this tree stand specifically for an evening, right? I'm going in. Once the deer get by me, they're going to potentially bust me, right? I have scenarios like that. That's when I tear down, get out of there, and I'm not coming back in the morning. Or, you know, you flip it. You go in on a morning hunt and maybe the tree stand's already there from when you set it up. Or maybe it's not, and you're doing a morning running gun, which these suck. I hate doing them, but you got to do it. And so you get in there, and then you know that, hey, if they get by me on the way back to bedding, there's a chance that they get that they bust me. You know, especially when you're targeting one deer or a specific hit list, and that's when first time in, best time in really matters, right? Because in a scenario like that, I'm cutting the wind. Pretty aggressive anyway. It's not like a 90 degree wind. So just Loctite access routes, both to your stand and out of your stand, is another thing that I've really learned has brought me more, I don't know how to put it, more encounters with deer of the caliber that I want to chase. And I think that goes, you know, whether I'm in Iowa, and some would say the pressure there is much lower, right? I can agree to that, than Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, whatever. That's why it's so important for those access routes, for being just ultra critical on how you approach and leave your tree stands. So there's that. What's the next one here? Cutting. In college, I would take notes and then I'd go back to look at my notes and I'm just like, holy cow, I must be handicapped because I don't even know what I'm writing right here. Like, and I did that. Wind cutting dictates. I don't know. Whatever. I think I probably covered it. Now, when it comes to this access, right? And this happens to me all the time. I know maybe I get a trail camera pick or I get a sighting from the tree stand of a buck working through the area. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to leave this tree stand here. I'm going to come back to it tomorrow morning or the next morning, or I'm going to give it a day to set. And man, this is where I struggle, honestly, the most, is how much time do I give a spot before it's time for me to move on. And the year before was a perfect example of me moving around probably too much, right? So I would go into an area, give it a try, leave, go somewhere else. Like I'd give it maybe two hunts, an afternoon and a morning, then go afternoon and a morning. And so what I saw on my trail cameras, once I pulled the trail cameras and pulled that data for that season, you know, after the season was over, I would see my target deer coming through the area maybe the next day, or the day after, or the day after that. So instead, I'm hopping to all these new places looking for a buck or checking trail cameras and moving in on the latest, greatest, when some of the trail cameras that I put in the spots where I don't check them and I just let them run all season. And usually those are in some type of bedding area or something. But the reason I do that is because I want to be mobile, right? But I think there's a time where you got to stick it out in an area and you got to see how the deer cycle through it on different wind directions. Now, you may still have to move. You may still have to go and, you know, you still may have to move. You still may have to tear down, move 20 yards, 30 yards, 40 yards, however many yards, so that if there's a shift in the wind, you can accommodate that deer movement, right? You can, you know, because if you set up, you know, hey, man, I got a northwest wind. I'm going to have it blow down this ridge, down this drainage, blah, blah, blah. Wind shift comes. The deer are going to adjust to that. So it's always hard for me. One thing that I go, okay, well, I just got to get out of the area. Wind's going to shift tomorrow. I got to get out of the area. Well, what has happened is I don't give the area enough time and the deer come through. So I think this year my goal is to just kind of ride it out, because if you're switching too much, if you're too mobile, then it's almost like, in my opinion, you're hoping a deer comes by to wherever location you're at, unless you have a lot of trail camera data or sighting data that allows you to move into an area. But if you haven't located a big buck, or you don't have trail camera pictures of whatever you're trying to shoot, you're hoping, you're guessing at that point. You're not actually observing the area and that specific feature of how deer are moving through it on different winds, right? So you pop in, and maybe I need to start giving it a afternoon, and then a morning, and then another afternoon, and then another morning, and really see what comes through there throughout the entire, you know, through an entire maybe 2, maybe 3 day period. And then after that, if there's still nothing that leads me to make a micro shift in that area, then that's when I bounce and head over to a different farm or a different part of the property or another ridge, just to see what's moving. Because sometimes it can be one ridge over where all the movement's at. And you got to adjust to that. See, 2019, when I was chasing a giant, I was on the wrong ridge. I paid a lot of attention to a ridge. I bounced around between on both sides of the creek as these ridges. But guess what? I saw him one morning, one ridge over. So I had a big wind shift. I couldn't hunt that ridge where I saw him, so I was going to bounce to another one, didn't see him. Then I bounced, got a trail camera picture, bounced him across the road, when I think what I should have done was plan for that next wind direction that I saw him on and just sit tight and hold in that position and see if he maybe worked his way through. But, you know, again, that's the rut. Everything that I'm telling you today, it isn't law, because the rut can dictate so much. That's when chaos ensues. But as far as access routes, man, that can always be locked tight. That's something that I think about all the time when I'm on when I'm in hunt stand, and I'm looking at places to put tree stands on the farm. And I do this every year, even though I've hunted this farm 7, 8, 9. Oh shit, it's been like 13 years now. I can't believe it. And then some of the other properties and even the public that I hunt down close to my house, I am looking at strategies. I'm looking at our access routes on every wind direction, not just, hey, you know, if I got an east-west, I can only have a north-south wind. If I have an east-west ridge, I can only have a north wind on the south-facing slope, blah, blah, blah. No, I need to know how to attack that specific ridge on any wind direction. So, I mean, the way I look at it is, if I had enough tree stands, let's just say I wanted to permanently put up a tree stand in every scenario, right? I don't do that because I run and gun, but if I could, I would, right? Let's say at the end of the ridge in a bedding area, man, it's a good bedding area. I should have potentially 4 tree stands in that bedding area for a multitude of wind directions. And if you kind of look at it like that, and you see a deer, there should never be a moment where you are saying, I better hold off. I can't, you know, I shouldn't hunt this because the wind's wrong. No, you got to find an access route into that bedding area or that staging area or that pinch point or that funnel when even if the wind is bad, there's got to be an access route in there. There should never be a moment where you're just like, ah, can't hunt it, unless you have so much trail camera data or historical data of deer moving through that they will literally bust you if there's, you know, you just have to set up in a different spot. Set up way up the ridge, set up way down the ridge, set up on the, you know, the north side of the ridge, on the south side, whatever. There's got to be chinks in the armor. There's always chinks in the armor. You just have to find them. So that's 27 minutes of me just going bananas right now. And I think I'm just going to kind of cut it at that. But picking your stand locations and the access routes to that stand location are, in my opinion, the most important part of attacking deer. And that is something that you just learn over time, right? I know a lot of the guys who listen to this podcast are, let me backtrack a sec. It doesn't matter if you hunt private. It doesn't matter if you hunt public. These principles translate to both of that, right? Are the deer pressured? If they're highly pressured, then this is more important. If the deer are not as pressured, well, it's still important, but maybe not as important. So just think about this the next time you're walking into the timber, maybe in the next couple of weeks, to either set up a tree stand, if you haven't done that already, or you're just going to run and gun, you start in here in September, man, just be ultra critical in your thought process. Don't overthink it. It's okay to go with your gut, but the access routes and the tree stand locations are obviously very important. So, I'll say this. I'm going to end on this because last night I made the mistake of going into iTunes or wherever I get reviews on the podcast. And some guy left me a 1-star review. And initially I wanted to come on here and just be like, you know what? Fuck you, piece of shit. I hope you die. that was the original thought. But then the cooler, calmer Dan Johnson came and he's like, to that guy who was so unhappy with my podcast, he had to give it a 1-star. I hope you have the best season that you've ever had. I hope that you find success and happiness in the tree stand this year with your family, with by yourself, you know, whether you're going to multiple states, whether you're just hunting a small 5-acre family farm, whatever it is, I hope you find success, you find happiness, and you kill a booner, right? I honestly believe that, but maybe just a little poison ivy on your nuts if along the way. That might make me feel just a little better. I'm just kidding. But everybody else, thank you very much for tuning in today. Really appreciate it. Please follow along on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. We got a ton of new content coming out. I'm doing a video series of the gear that I'm using. And it is, the first three are about pants and base layers and jackets and upper body, you know, clothing and boots and socks and stuff like that. And then I'm probably going to break down some of my tree stands and other equipment like bows and arrows and whatnot. So there's that. Again, I wish all of you the best of luck. Please go out and leave no excuses. Like, this is the moment that we have been waiting for since last season, right? We live and we breathe and we die for this shit. And I'll tell you right now, I'm going to personally go out and I'm going to hunt my balls off. And I don't want anybody to say I don't want there to be any excuses, right? Oh, the neighbor or you know, there's other guys on my property. Oh, there's too many guys on public. I don't give a shit. Like, find a way, hunt hard, move. Got problems? Move. Then go again, move. Do whatever you need to do, legally, of course, to get the job done, man. And then at the end of the season, if you still didn't tag a buck, you can say, you know what, damn it, I I busted my balls and it just didn't happen. Deer won. Guess what? Next year, I'm going to be smarter. I'm going to be more calculated, and then I'm going to kill them, right? And just go into every hunt with extreme confidence, not only in yourself and your strategy, but your equipment as well. And it's going to work out for you. I swear to God it will. So I wish all of you the best of luck. Be sure to subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles on iTunes or wherever you download your podcast. Be sure to follow Nine Finger Chronicles on Instagram and Facebook. And dude, good vibes, man. Wear your safety harness. Good vibes in, good vibes out. All the time, good vibes out. And we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.